ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Shocking evidence, jury drama, and witness cross-examinations. The Case of podcast takes you inside the biggest trials in the country, reporting the in-depth detail of how courts work and who's in there each week. We've brought you Erin Patterson's mushroom murder trial, the case of Toya's murder in Cairns, a Canberra cold case, the two intruders, and many more. Search for The Case Of, it's on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
Today, the Australian people have voted for Australian values.
The choice is simple for the Liberal Party: change or die.
We need to have more Australian everything. We need to manifest a hyper-Australia.
We've always been about the planet, but we've got to make sure that people have their daily needs met.
People are starting to see that there is actually a different way of doing politics.
Hello and welcome to The Party Room. I'm Patricia Carvelis and I'm joining you from Ngunnawal Country in Parliament House, Canberra.
And I'm Fran Kelly on the Gadigal land of the Eora Nation in Sydney. And PK, full transparency for Party Roomers today. It's Groundhog Day. It's petrol prices and oil prices and the war again. Because, don't touch that dial, folks, it's affecting all our lives.
Oh, totally. It's the first, second, third, tenth story. Don't try and really start a conversation with anyone on anything else. And that's ordinary people too. Like after the Prime Minister delivered his address to the nation, which of course is historic, my phone lit up with text messages, not from my political contacts and friends, although those too, but by like anyone I've almost ever met, Fran. Like, seriously, I was shocked because people were engaged and very concerned about their petrol prices, what's going to happen in the next couple of months. And it just, you know, when you just know something is next level just from the volume. And I thought, this has hit a nerve with people everywhere, not just the political class.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true. And I think that explains that the Prime Ministers were getting the message too. And I think that's what we got, the address to the nation overnight. We're recording this on Thursday morning. These are rare events. It's probably worth reminding everyone. Prime Ministers, you know, clear the decks, clear the network schedules for an address to the nation, preserve for significant times, usually dire times like war, or the ones I remember are the GFC and I remember COVID.
Iraq.
And that's what we are facing with this war and oil crisis in the Gulf. It is a dire time potentially. The PM's address got a mixed response, some suggesting it was too timid. Did it miss the mark? Did it get the tone right? Was it the right time to do it? We're going to talk about all these questions. It comes after the government went big on pump priming, literally cutting 26 cents a litre off the price of petrol. So, you know, there's more spending going out. We're going to take a look at all of that. But I think, you know, back to your point, the PM did this because they got the messages too, Pico. This is affecting everyone. Like we said last week, it's hard not to be anxious when you front up to your local petrol station and it's out of fuel. That seems to have been fixed in the short term, around me anyway, and now we got these cuts.
We do. Look, it comes after the government has also shifted its language on the war. There has been a key shift, urging clarity and what are the objectives. So really starting to question the Trump administration's stance and the way that they're managing this. And the opposition also has been messaging on the war in a way that I think is a bit confused. We're going to tease that out as well. We'll also look at Angus Taylor and Andrew Hastie, the two A's, the big, tall A's, the men of leadership
A's. I love
and
that.
Leadership. Well, they are, right?
They are big, tall A's.
One is the opposition leader. One is obviously the opposition leader in waiting. And it's become crystal clear that there is only one leader that is breaking through. And unfortunately for Angus Taylor, that is Andrew Hastie. Now, we've got a stellar guest to dive into all of this with us. Katina Curtis is the Canberra Bureau Chief with the West Australian, and it's also the state home to massive coal and gas resources, and there's a lot of talk about gas today too. Katina, welcome to the Party Room.
Great to be here with you guys.
It's fantastic to have you with us. You know, WA, this big resources state, you know, you've got a particularly beat on that, which is helpful. The PM delivered that national address overnight, Katina. It was a Team Australia moment, warning all of us that there are tough times ahead. The core message, though, was the government's got your back. but we can all do our bit.
The months ahead may not be easy. I want to be upfront about that. No government can promise to eliminate the pressures that this war is causing. I can promise we will do everything we can to protect Australia from the worst of it. These are uncertain times, but I'm absolutely certain of this. We will deal with these global challenges the Australian way, working together and looking after each other, as we always have.
Katina, there was fevered speculation the hours before the speech that didn't materialise. The PM had no, you know, dire policy announcements to make. So what did you think of that? Did you think his address to the nation met the moment?
Look, I think there was an overwhelming sense at the end of it was just like, was that it? Was that all there was? As you say, he didn't announce anything new. They telegraphed that it was going to happen hours and hours in advance. You know, it was late morning for something that happened at dinner time. So, you know, plenty of speculation flying around through the day. You know, was he going to say that we shift to level 3 of the brand new fuel emergency plan that everyone's just getting their heads around? Was he going to say that we're sending troops to reopen the strait? Like, you know, what could it be? And then it was, the message was, you know, do your Easter travel, fill up your tank, think about others, you know, don't take more than you need. And there are hard times ahead, but they're not here yet. So pretty, yeah, calming everything down, absolutely. Getting in before Easter, trying to, I suppose, show that he's stepping up, mm-hmm. And taking leadership. But I do think maybe given, as you said, the build-up for it through the day, perhaps the sense of underwhelm in the response. And that's kind of that we're seeing that in the political reaction to it, as well as the reaction just from friends, family, people texting in, yeah, to see if it actually works.
Well, interesting. I mean, you always have to look at the satirists to figure out where this is going. Batuta sharing the, you know, the Prime Minister addresses the nation, but it could have been an email, like something like that, right?
Yeah.
Like, that was pretty funny.
Batuta earlier in the day basically called it. They said, you know, PM does April Fool's joke, says everything's fine.
Yeah. Right. So let's go to everything's fine. It's sort of half what he's saying, but not fully what he's saying, okay? So there's a lot of, like, reading the tea leaves, and that's what we're here to do. His message was actually things are about to get bad, but we have your back. We are a government, I'm sort of channeling him, that will throw everything at this to try and inoculate Australians as much as possible, but we can't do it all because it's impossible, like, you know, because we're not an island that sort of exists without any supply issues with other nations. So that was the message. The other one I saw as this is not going to be COVID. So I actually think what he was trying to do, yes, you're right, because we had the whole day, people thought it was about to be something COVID-like, but he actually ended up doing the opposite, which was, we're not going to come in hard. We're not going to tell you what to do. The real message was agency, right? You've got agency. Do what you want, but equally be nice if you could catch a train.
And over coming weeks, if you can switch to catching the train or bus or tram to work, do so. That builds our reserves and it saves fuel for people who have no choice but to drive. Farmers and miners and tradies who need diesel every single day.
Trains are good only if you know where the trains are. If the trains are too far, don't worry about it. Wasn't that the vibe?
Yeah, I think so. And it was quite interesting. I spoke the other week with Karina Roon, who's a psychology professor, and she did some research on panic buying in COVID and kind of what drove it, but also what is effective messaging to stop it. And basically the message we got from the PM yesterday was in line with what that research shows. They found that just telling people to stop it, we were talking just before about remembering Scott Morrison, that cut-through moment when people were buying new toilet paper and pasta, like stripping supermarket shelves, and he stood up here in the courtyard in Parliament and said, just stop it. The PM yesterday didn't say that, obviously. And so the expert research says that giving that message about think of others, think of the nurses, think of the shift workers, think of the truckies who are bringing food to you so that you can have food, you know, think of the farmers, that kind of community sentiment appealing to people's Australian sense of wanting to help each other is much more effective than just telling people or trying to shame people or telling people to cut it out. So I thought that it was, his messaging was in line with what that research actually shows.
And it worked for me. It worked for me, Katina, by the end of it. I mean, it was short. It was tiny, right? And there had been that big build up. And that was a bit of a surprise. And the PM is no orator. So although this was a ask not what your country can do for you moment, he can't deliver like JFK used to be able to deliver. But that aside, you know, there'd been a lot of pressure on the PM to take the leadership, to try and send a message of calm to the nation. They'd spent a lot of time and a lot of money this week, and they don't think that they wanted that to sort of disappear into the ether over Easter as well. But I did feel by the end of it that his job was to say to us, this is what you can do. You can do it for the regions, for the farmers, for the nation. And I think he's the only one that can do that, really. He is the Prime Minister, and it's called jawboning, and that's what he was doing. And he also said, and you can do other things, like why don't you think about catching public transport? And he would be helped by that if all the states cheapened the fares. A few states have just cut fares altogether, and Queensland already has 50-cent fares. And I spoke to someone last night who showed that that has truly been working in Queensland in terms of getting people onto the public transport. So there are things we can do. It's that agency you're talking about. And by the end of it, I thought, well, I think he did his job. He jawboned us into saying, don't do too much. He reassured us we can go away. And he said, but things are going to get tough. But if they get tough, don't worry, we're on it. We've got your back. And presumably we will hear after Easter at some point whether we do need to, you know, ration petrol or things like that. But the opposition's criticism of, you know, he didn't lay out a plan, he didn't tell us we need a plan for transparency.
What they need is confidence. They need clarity, not confusion. And last night's address didn't help. It could have been a social media post. It didn't lay out what the situation was clearly. It didn't lay out what the plan was clearly, and it certainly didn't give the confidence Australians need right now to get about their lives.
I honestly, I mean, how much information do people want to know? I don't think they want a daily prime ministerial press conference about fuel prices. Maybe the idea of a national dashboard about which, if your local petrol station's got fuel is a fine idea. Do we really want to know about how many tankers haven't arrived and things like that? I don't think so.
I don't know that people need that level of detail, you know, much as we've all become sudden experts in the fuel supply chain.
Just ask me a question about the Straits of Hormuz.
I love that.
But I think the other thing that the government is really desperate to make sure happens is that the economy doesn't shut down. You know, in COVID, the medical advice was that you had to keep people separate to each other. And so the kind of the ultimate effect of that was everything just stopped. And this is a totally different situation. And they are desperate to keep that message about keep going about your business, do things, you know, go on holidays, make that tourism spend, go to the caravan park, you know, buy the chocolate eggs. Like they don't want things to stop dead, because that would be, you know, there's already a lot of speculation about whether or if we're already in a recession, whether that's coming down the track. And if everything stopped dead, then yes, absolutely, we'd go into recession. And then that's a much, much bigger problem.
Do you two think that the opposition's criticism is valid and is hitting the right nerve? Do you think that's right, or are they overreaching? I mean, what do you reckon the government should be doing and shouldn't be doing?
I think that certainly kind of at the start of the week, everyone I was talking to, you know, in business, resources industry, sort of even just, you know, friends and family, everyone is saying, we just don't know what's going on. We can't get our heads around it. So I think that idea around transparency and the lack of information, yeah, I think that is a valid criticism.
But what information? What information? That's what
I think people want to know. They want that reassurance that the fuel supplies are coming in and we won't have the block. And it seems like from everything the government's been saying, we're going to be fine for another month. But then sort of privately, ministers are saying we're quite worried about what happens at the end of April. So even if the even if the war ended today, I mean, we don't know what Donald Trump's going to say in a couple of hours from when we are speaking, but even if the war ends today, you know, there has been that blockage for the past month of the shipments getting through, and so that still will need to flow through the supply chain in some way. And
but
so
you can't tell people that, right? Or people will panic and start panicking.
Well, no.
Get the jerry cans out again.
Well, this is the issue, right? Some of the critique I've heard today, I mean, from analysts, not necessarily the opposition, because that's a whole different kettle of fish, but has been, you know, the government's not levelling with us about level four and all of this. How much of that is because they're actually in the shadow of COVID, worried about alarming us?
I think so. That plan that they released on Monday was very vaguely worded. It gives a lot of leeway to the premiers and the PM to just kind of decide things when they see fit. And the Prime Minister couldn't even say in his press conference whether it was level three or level four that envisaged rationing. Roger Cook stood up shortly afterwards and was quite upfront, said, look, it's not till level four and we're a long way off from that. Mm-hmm. Some interesting stats out today, actually, on the rationing front. A survey of West Australian households last week found 67% of people would back fuel rationing, they'd in favour of it. And a similar survey in Victoria said 61% would back it. So people, actually, there is good, at the moment, there is goodwill for the idea of rationing.
Yeah.
If we get to actual shortages.
That's a great point, because Australians also, if you look at the public opinion polling, blame Donald Trump for the war.
Absolutely.
And so that helps Albanese, because they can see that that's why we're having these issues. They understand, I mean, like, no one's stupid. They understand that we're part of a sort of world ecosystem in terms of shipping, and that there are consequences to our fuel supply, even if you want to say we're under prepared, blah, blah, blah. It doesn't matter. We still have the same issue. So people have been prepared, I think that's right, to go, okay, how are we going to share it till this thing is over? Because we're dealing with a man that many people think is completely erratic and unpredictable and can't be trusted.
Says something different every day.
I also think it's important to note, though, beyond the national address, the address to the nation, you have to say it in that tone when you say it, the address to the nation. There's also been a lot of money thrown out by the government this week to help. It does feel a whole lot like COVID all over again in that sense. You know, the Treasurer announced tax holidays for small business for the duration. There was help for small businesses to access faster credit. That's going to be announced today as part of measures to keep small business afloat. They slashed the fuel excise. That came in this week on the 1st of April. And from what I can see around me, the servos have passed it on and more. Mm. So that's, you know, good news for the government. But that's another $2.5 billion. So not small change. If the government's confirmed this, it will underwrite those fuel supplies to guarantee certainty. It did that over the weekend. So it's a lot the government's done. And I guess that I say again, make the point that I think that was part of the PM's address to the nation, to make sure people knew all that going into a longer break. Parliament's not sitting for a while. But it is interesting that the government has now taken those steps, because it's resisted spending money. It's been clobbered for spending too much money. So it needs to know that it can get its messaging right. Yes, we're spending, but we're helping in a responsible national government leadership way to keep our economy moving, basically. And they did a lot this week. Whether that is going to be enough to satisfy the critics, I doubt that it is. And I think it's going to be very important come budget time that the Treasurer can show, okay, we've spent all that money. We've got a lot of money coming in, actually, and they need to be upfront about that from these higher resource prices. Something like $60 billion over 5 years is what Westpac suggests will be the boon to the budget. So they've got to be able to package that in a way that looks responsible for Australians, or the opposition's just sitting there waiting to hammer them.
Mm. I think all of that is true. And you just mentioned the budget. So it makes sense to me that we kind of talk about, so we're recording this as we do Thursday morning-ish. The Prime Minister is delivering the National Press Club address, where he will be, you know, lots going to happen today. He will be asked a lot of difficult questions, no doubt. But in that, he's going to also tell us that this war will not stop the government going into what they see as the most significant reforming budget. Now, reform is one of those words that is highly contested. What is your reform is someone else's tax hike. What is your reform is someone else's, you know, you didn't do that much anyway. So caveat on that word, because it's a bit of a dressed up word, isn't it?
But yeah.
Katina, that's going to be a key message of the Prime Minister, and that's kind of very crucial, isn't it? Because he wants you to know that he's not going to be a do-nothing government.
Yeah, absolutely. He's going to say it's the most ambitious budget ever. And we've heard similar from Jim Chalmers, who's done several press conferences this week as well. I thought, Fran, actually, not just all the fuel stuff they've done this week, but they've actually taken several other steps as well that is kind of getting away from just crisis mode and back to business of government. We saw action on card surcharges,
yeah,
when you know, charging you more to use your own money when you pay by card, and stuff around kind of ending subscription traps for people. So there's a few other bits and pieces going on too. But Jim Chalmers has really said, he's been asked multiple times this week, are you still going ahead with these plans? He outlined this sort of three-pillar approach to the budget a few weeks ago. And he's like, yes, damn straight, we're going ahead with a big tax package and a big productivity package, and we're looking for cuts in the budget. So he is adamant that he's going ahead with it. In fact, I think he said that the crisis, the tough times, makes it even more important, not less important, to be doing that.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, the opposition is also able to chew gum and walk at the same time. And Shadow Treasurer Tim Wilson is mounting a pretty ferocious attack on the government and its spending, and painting it as abandoning small business. That's why I think it's important the government wanted to trumpet its support for small business this week. That's part of that reason. But economists are critical of this cost of living relief from the government this week, saying it's going to be inflationary, it's going to add to inflation. I've been struggling to get my head around that. I guess we shouldn't prosecute this here, but why something's inflationary if it's gone up by a dollar and they're just knocking 26 cents off it? I don't get why that's inflationary. But what's clear is that the government needed to give some cost of living relief, I think, to people at the moment, because times are already tough. The government had already added to inflation in the past. We're already at a time of high inflation, again creeping up. This is going to hammer us. Oh, and I think Martin Parkinson said this, didn't he, in the National Press Club yesterday, former head of Treasury, head of Premiers. He said the government needed to do something to give some relief to people. And I think politically they did, but I also think in economic terms they did too, because, you know, these petrol prices, they went through the roof. So I'm interested in this notion of whether it's inflationary. Is the coalition going to pick that up? They can't really, because they were calling on the government to axe the tax. Yeah, yeah, axe the tax. So, you know, there's sort of split and mixed messaging, and we haven't even got to the opposition yet in terms of mixed messaging on the war. But there's a lot of kind of contrary complaints being made about the government's response to this at the moment. And I think that just reflects how difficult this challenge is going to be, really.
Yeah, well, I suppose the big question is, which you've kind of alluded to on one front, the kind of responses we're seeing from the opposition. Now, we expect that the opposition leader, Angus Taylor, will also address the nation, which is a protocol that's allowed. You know, the opposition
address the
respond.
Nation.
Yeah, you don't have to take that chance, though. He will. Katina, the opposition, have they been a bit at sixes and sevens on some of this? Well, I'm sort of by asking the question. It's one of those, what are they called? It's a loaded question. Mm-hmm. I think they have, particularly on the war, but also, you know, maybe overly critical of the government's response. You know, Raf was saying earlier in the week on Politics Now, they should just let the government stuff it up if they're going to stuff it up. Like, it seems sometimes gratuitous.
It still feels like there is a reflexive no to everything that the government says. And, you know, as you were saying just before, like the fuel excise, they were partly claiming it because they'd come out on the Friday and said do this, and then on the Monday they're like, well, you're just following us, you took the idea,
yeah.
but also it's going to be inflationary because you're not offsetting the spending, and we had suggested, you know, the opposition suggested cutting brakes for EVs and home batteries and things that help people save energy and petrol
when there's an oil crisis.
It's unusual that we wouldn't want electrification at a time like this, yeah. Right?
Even in kind of trying to claim the win for the government taking up their policy, they were still attacking the government over it. So I think they haven't quite found that line. They keep saying, you know, the nation's looking for leadership. The Prime Minister made the point several times in Parliament this week that his type of leadership during COVID was to support the government broadly. I mean, they didn't do it on everything. They didn't back in Morrison on everything, but on a lot of the emergency measures, it is true they did.
They did. Although, to be fair, I'm just, you know, because it's like I'm obsessed. I remember when the then government wanted to finally get rid of JobKeeper, which was very expensive. The opposition was like, how outrageous it shouldn't. Now, can you imagine if they'd kept it for longer, like given the debt we're in?
Yeah.
So they made the right decision, the Morrison government, to switch it off then. So let's not forget that sometimes they were a little gratuitous themselves, but please pick it up again.
And when we come to 3 months down the track and the fuel excise is due to go back up to its full 52-cent level, I mean, let's wait and see where the calls come from to keep it
let's
in.
Let's wait and see. Look, I think it's important to remember that all this stuff about petrol prices and cost of living pain is in the context of a war. And it's that war is now stretching into its fifth week. An end date is no clearer yet, but we are going to get this. Well, we're not going to. Americans are going to get their president addressing them in a little while later today. But I think the Prime Minister's language, our Prime Minister's language, has toughened up this week. It shifted a little. You know, on Tuesday he put a call out for clarity from Donald Trump on the US objectives and urged de-escalation.
I want to see more certainty in what the objectives of the war are, and I want to see a de-escalation. So a de-escalation is in the global economy's interests.
That was in song with a whole lot of our European partners and Britain, for instance, doing the same thing. Penny Wong followed suit, ruled out troops on the ground. The Guardian Essential poll found last week that only one in four Australians approve of this war with Iran. The Prime Minister found himself under maximum pressure from Donald Trump. You know, when Donald Trump just happened to off the cuff say, well, Australia hasn't been great either. And then later in the week on his Truth Social post, he said to all of us, all countries of the world, go get your own oil, which, you know, was childish. So I think what we've seen this week is the allies, Australia amongst them, UK, France, Europe, pushing back. Is this a shift in approach? Is it being driven by voter fatigue, do you think, Katina? Or is this the government just saying, no, we're holding fast here, but at the same time we're starting to get messaging from Defence Minister Richard Marles and others that, well, that doesn't mean that after the war is over, Australia won't play its part because, you know, we are an allied force. Where do you think we're heading on this?
Yeah, I think we definitely saw a step up in the de-escalation calls this week. Also, you know, quite strong language from the Prime Minister around the objectives of the war and really saying, look, put the theoretical objective to change the regime in Iran, you know, the PM was just flat out saying, you can't do that from externally, like that history shows that doesn't work, and kind of cut your losses and get out. But I think there's also some alarm at the, one of the many suggestions from Donald Trump this week was that he might just end the war and leave the Strait of Hormuz is still in Iran's hands.
Yeah, quite alarming, that thought.
I mean, seriously, and I think the worst outcome of all.
The rest of the world's response to that was sort of, you break it, you board it. Come on. But Australia really still quite adamant that we don't want to be sending troops on the ground. We don't really have, as I understand, the naval capability to be sending ships, but certainly ships is not necessarily the best thing to send anyway. They'd be quite vulnerable to air attacks, so it's almost better to have air power. Richard Marles this morning re-emphasising that we have sent the Wedge Tower, the surveillance plane, to help out the UAE. So whether there is potential to do more support like this, again, no one actually asked for us to send anything more at this stage. But I guess the UK is holding this Strait of Hormuz summit that we are taking part in. And so maybe there will be some kind of an actual plan to kind of get around Donald Trump and try and fix this up for the rest of the world without him.
Look, the messaging from the coalition, which we mentioned, has been a little, I think, a bit confusing on the war or what they think should happen. Interesting, after Andrew Hastie took such a strong position, the sort of most outspoken, I think, in the parliament, Ed Husic too, actually, on the Labor side, to be, you know, balanced about it, but about Donald Trump and his war. We've got Ted O'Brien, who's the shadow foreign spokesperson, obviously Angus Taylor, the leader, being all the way with the USA.
I think the key question is it in our national interest? And my view is yes, it is.
But we should be open to making that contribution.
We should be. I believe we should be open to making a contribution to ensure
of assets
that,
or personnel or both.
Well, again, let's wait to see what is being asked of us and how we can make a contribution.
We haven't heard much this week from James Patterson, who's now the Shadow Defence Minister. Mm. And he, a couple of weeks ago, he was saying, you know, it's not necessarily in Australia's national interest to send this. We need to look after our immediate region, which is the kind of language that is in the Defence Strategic Review from a couple of years ago. It's about to get an update. I thought that was really interesting that he was taking that approach, because I haven't kind of heard the coalition over the last couple of years embrace that language from the DSR quite so explicitly. And so I certainly think that he would be saying internally, like, it's our interests are here in our region. There's certainly some suggestion that the US would perhaps make sure that we keep looking after the Pacific and our immediate area rather than, you know, going all in. Though with Donald Trump, who knows? And another interesting thing, Michael McCormack stood up at there was a press conference with a cast of thousands from the coalition talking about water, and he got asked, as a former Pacific minister, should we be helping the Pacific if they start to run short of fuel? Should we be sending things? And he said, look, I think we definitely should be helping the Pacific, and I'm sure everyone, all of my colleagues think the same, and certainly from the expressions on some of the faces behind him, I'm not sure that all of his colleagues thought the same as that.
No, great observation. I think that's a great point you make about James Patterson. Where have they locked up James Patterson? He's normally in the front line.
And I think it's a choice.
And I was surprised to hear Ted O'Brien in his new role be so sort of open to providing assets and even personnel if asked, to our closest ally. That sort of seemed out of step with even what I heard from Tim Wilson, the Shadow Treasurer, half an hour later on the same network, saying we should be extremely cautious. So I think there are mixed messages. And you mentioned Andrew Hastie, PK. Let's talk about Andrew Hastie and Angus Taylor. What did you call them? The big A's, the big tall A's. Andrew Hastie's plain speaking, should we call it, on Insiders on Sunday. You know, he took a very different stance on some pretty high-value issues for the coalition, like opposition to the capital gains tax and negative gearing and the windfall gas tax. I think watching that, everyone was reminded that he is a leader in waiting. You know, there's been, you know, a bit of talk since, oh, is this a leadership challenge? Well, it's not. They've only just changed leaders, so there's nothing like that in the ether. But it was very notable that he was speaking differently, saying different things to his leader particularly. And in fact, we then heard that, you know, Angus Taylor reportedly had to take him aside for a little chat, little leadership talking to. Andrew Hastie's dismissed that, saying that's just vexatious.
Look, I had a great chat with Angus yesterday, and I think it's a mark of his leadership that he actually establishes the facts first before he responds to anything. And he read my transcript and he let me know personally that there was no issue between us. And that's why I think he's a great leader. And I think I'm more than happy to work for him.
You know, like I say, it's not a leadership challenge, but people are noting his independent thinking. It was impossible to miss it, really. And some people, you know, I was just at Pilates and someone said, oh, he was talking a lot of sense, you know. Some are liking it, PK.
Oh, yeah, some are very much liking it. I think Hastie, well, I've long thought Hastie is a very interesting political figure, but I think on this he is playing a blinder. I think he's a right-wing populist.
Yes.
That's what I think he is broadly, with some conventions. Like, so he's not sort of a rogue type, but he is, because so he does believe in the conservative tradition and movement, but with a different touch, clearly. And I think on this, he is absolutely reading the mood. And he is, like, I know people who are just like, how is it that, and I'm going to frame this way, Katina. I've followed politics for 25 years, right? The fact that in the Labor Party, there is so much discipline. Ed Husic is the only one, literally, that you don't even, I mean, I do afternoon briefing. I don't, you know, there are backbenchers that come on. Much space for them to come on and say, look, I'm not happy with what Trump's doing. People are really upset. They don't, though. They don't. That's how much discipline goes on. So we've got now a left-leaning government
that barely criticises the Trump dysfunction that's causing havoc in the world. And then we've got apparently what has been depicted as a hard right figure in the coalition who is saying the stuff that I reckon lefties think and maybe even moderate people who are just over Donald Trump. Are we in upside down world?
Yeah. I mean, maybe we are. I think that Hasty's interview on Insiders last week was all anyone could talk about on Monday when they weren't talking about
petrol
prices.
Well, it was startling, Katina, wasn't it?
And a lot of the sentiment I've heard from his colleagues is that, well, great, at least someone's putting some ideas about out there. Where we are in the Liberal Party is, you know, in such a dire place, we need ideas and we need to be talking about different things. I thought it was interesting, particularly, I guess, on the housing stuff and talking about taxes and things, you know, some of what he was saying was really similar to the kind of ideas that Keith Wallahan put in an essay a few weeks ago. Keith Wallahan, obviously the former Liberal member for Menzies, who lost the seat at the last election, he also was seen as an up-and-coming leader, not as far-right as Andrew Hastie. But, you know, so the younger people in the party are saying we need to have these ideas and talk about ways to do something serious on and win back younger voters, even if it goes against maybe the knee-jerk Liberal no higher taxes principle. You know,
it's definitely not what the younger shadow treasurer is saying.
Well, no, it's not what he's saying. He's very much inside the tent, isn't he? And Angus Taylor asked about those types of things on housing and gas taxes. And he said, well, you tax things that you don't want more of. But I think on the housing front, like, the point is that we don't want more of investors buying houses. We want more owner-occupiers buying houses is the kind of, that's the problem, right? The home ownership problem. And so maybe you do want to tax investors if that's what you're saying. But anyway, Taylor, when asked about a bunch of Hastie's things, gave very conventional Liberal responses. You know, you could have scripted them in advance pretty much.
Yeah, you could, absolutely. Look, let's wind up the day because we've got to go to the press club address. We've got to watch Donald Trump.
And oh, my God, so many national addresses to watch.
We need to record another podcast in a couple of hours. Look, we won't, but you will get more from us. You always do. Katina, final thoughts? I mean, what is the next week, right? Australians will go on their Easter break. Those who are into Easter will enjoy it. Those people who are Orthodox like me wait a week. Others who are not Christian at all don't care, or just like chocolate eggs. So everyone does it their own way. It's school holidays too, though, mm-hmm. So a lot of families off for that reason as well. What does it mean? Does the Prime Minister keep kind of going full throttle during this period? Is it a bit of a lull? Is all the big stuff going to happen after the break?
I think it'll be a lull. People will switch off. They will, well, if they might go away, but they'll, you know, turn inwards to their families, their sort of local communities. I'm sure people won't stop talking about petrol because it's a very pressing issue. We are expecting to see some more moves from the PM late next week around talking around international partnerships and securing supplies of oil. And so watch this space on that. But I don't think there'll be any more big policy announcements, depending what Donald Trump says.
So is that going to make everything we've said redundant, possibly?
I mean, who knows?
Maybe. Either way, what we're sure of is that we're in a full crisis, yet we are not alert or alarmed, maybe a little alert. Thank you very much, Katina. Always love your insights.
Thank you.
Yeah, Katina, you just go for a big long drive. Plenty of petrol. Enjoy your Easter, and I hope the bill comes to you.
Plenty of petrol. Don't take any more than you need.
No jerry cans.
But I'm only asking.
And maybe catch the train.
Thank you.
Fran, something exciting just happened on my television.
Yeah, I know. They sent up a rocket. They're going to the moon, PK.
To the moon?
They haven't been to the moon since 1972. Well, they're going to go around the moon. Okay, they're not going to be on the moon, but they haven't been there since 1972. And I actually got a chill because the words flashed up on the screen, good luck, Godspeed, Artemis, let's go.
Oh, you love that sort of stuff, though.
Well, it was my era, right? It was my time.
And, no, but it's also, look, it wasn't my era, but
it's hopeful in a funny way, but then it's also scary.
Yeah, it's both, but it's also seared in our sort of memories, these images. So, yeah, there is a nostalgia to it too. Yeah, it was just an amazing image. Bit different, isn't it, to all the other news as well. Something kind of like, you know,
hopeful about, you know, humans pushing the limits and all of that palaver, which I quite like. Well, Fran, it's nearly Easter. I am actually going on a road trip. It is a pricey road trip. I'm very happy that there is a hybrid involved. But that is it for the party room today. Sending your questions for our future Question Time editions. We're especially fond of voice notes. Send them to thepartyroom@abc.net.au.
And PK, I'm not going on a road trip, but I am using a lot of Avgas because I am going on an Easter break too. There will be no insiders on Background this Saturday for Easter, but Politics Now will be back in your feed on Monday, everyone, with our good pal Jacob Grieber in the hosting chair because, PK, you're going to be on your road trip.
I am just taking a week off, guys, but I'll be back. And, of course, everyone loves Jacob anyway, so you're not going to worry, really. Not even going to notice my absence. He'll be joined by Claire Armstrong to bring you up to date with all the latest after the Easter break. And because we're in a crisis, even though we're in an Easter break, things go quiet. Sure, they might be a little quieter, but also maybe not.
No, there's plenty going on. And when we get back from our Easter break, we're going to be armed with a very exciting special announcement about a live show at the ABC to celebrate a few years of our podcast, PK.
Just a few? You mean 10?
10 years. Can you believe it?
Oh, 10 is when your kids are starting to be smart-ass tweens. What does that mean about our podcast? We're at the smart-ass cusp of puberty tween phase. Yes, we've been doing it for a long time. Look, you know, I'm going to pump up our tyres. We are the biggest political podcast in this country. And we are very proud of it, and I'm glad you've stayed with us and also shared it with your friends. Tickets and details will be announced soon. In the meantime, remember to follow Politics Now on ABC Listen.
And it's free. Yes, you need a ticket, but it's free. See you, PK. Have a great Easter.
See you, Fran.